Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So, Sri Krishna Sandarbha, Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 4, Eternality and Superiority of Krishna's Two-Handed Form. Page 43. The Lord maintaining His reputation of being affectionate to His devotees, inconceivable in form, and also a thief, having destroyed the Brahmastra, disappeared at that spot from the sight of the child 10 months in the womb. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.12.11. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Child Parikit was not observing a living being who is limited by time and space. There is a gulf of difference between the Lord and the individual living being. The Lord is mentioned herein as the supreme living being, unlimited by time and space. Every living being is unlimited by time and space. No, every living being is limited by time and space. I was thinking, that doesn't make sense. They were saying one time it was with Pancha Vidarmash, I think we were in Bangkok. It was just him and me. But still he followed the whole program, the morning program. So he'd give the class, I said, listen. But it was very busy. And so then he was tired one day, and so he started to fall asleep. And as he was falling asleep, he said something like that didn't match the philosophy. And then when he heard that, it's kind of like, who said that? What? It's like, where's the Maya Bhavi? Like that. Yeah, same like that. He said, every living being is unlimited by time. And I thought, wait a minute. No, that's not our philosophy.
I think because when you fall asleep, actually the time stretches.
Uh-huh.
So the feeling is when something happens, then there's like a gap of time, so that might be the reason that he thought he heard it from somebody.
Yeah,
else.
Yeah, it's kind of like oh, that, he looked at me, looked at the rest. Let me figure out he would say that was funny. Even though a living being is qualitatively one with the Lord, quantitatively there is a great difference between the Supreme Soul and the common individual soul. In Bhagavad Gita, both the living beings and the Supreme Being are said to be all-pervading, yena sarvam idam tatam. Yet there is a difference between these two kinds of all-pervasiveness. A common living being or soul can be all-pervading within his own limited body, but the Supreme Being is all-pervading in all space and all time. Common living being cannot extend its influence over another common living being by its all-pervasiveness. But the Supreme Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is unlimitedly able to exert his influence over all places and all times over all living beings. And because he is all-pervasive, unlimited by time and space, he can appear even within the womb of the mother of the child Parikit. He is mentioned herein as the protector of the righteous. Anyone who is a surrendered soul under the Supreme is righteous, and he is specifically protected by the Lord in all circumstances. The Lord is the indirect protector of the unrighteous also, for he rectifies their sins through his external potency. The Lord is mentioned herein as one who is dressed in the 10 directions. This means dressed with garments on 10 sides, up and down. He is present everywhere and can appear and disappear at his will from everywhere and anywhere. His disappearance from the sight of the child Parikshit does not mean that he appeared on the spot from any other place. He was present there, and even after his disappearance, he was there, although invisible to the eyes of the child. This material covering of the effulgent firmament is also something like a womb of the material nature. And we are all put into the womb by the Lord, the Father of all living beings. He is present everywhere, even in this material womb of Mother Durga. And those who are deserving can see the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.12.11 purport. Yeah. So the aspect of how he's always... he's always present everywhere, but at the same time as then he chooses whether it's his the personal feature, the Paramatma feature, or the Bhagavan feature. But he's always, everything is him, so he's always present everywhere. So here is that he'll see the form of the Lord, but even after he disappears, the Lord's still there. So, yeah. Sridhar Swami explains. In the place that the Lord was seen, he disappeared. At the same place, he disappeared at the same place. He did not go somewhere else, since he is all-pervading. So it's not that you saw him leave. He was just there, and then he disappeared there. He appeared there, he disappeared there. So that's the point. He's all-pervading, so he can appear anywhere or disappear anywhere, because it's all him anyway, so it's just a matter of which feature he wants to present. Yeah.
Yes. Sometimes also Rupa Goswami, he mentions in Lagavatamrita, he says that the Lord, sometimes he appears through the agent, mm-hmm. and sometimes just like that, like you explained, mm-hmm. because he's all-pervading, he just manifested and he's unmanifested. Mm-hmm. So the devotees, they through the agent, it's kind of more perceivable to us. Mm-hmm. But it's not as godly, mm-hmm. because just it appeared. He's like somebody asked me Hamsavatar, where's he appeared from? That there's no description. Mm-hmm. And then I said, he can appear just like that. And then he can, and also the disappearance. Sometimes there's a pastime of disappearance, or sometimes it is mentioned that the Lord disappeared from his vision. Mm-hmm. So it's. One is more human, one is more mystical. Mm-hmm. Or like Varaha from the nostril of Brahma, that. Mm-hmm. So one is through agent and one is, by his internal potency. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Because these details, if it explains, then it's something to be absorbed in. Because it's interesting to know so many things, but if that's not explained, you get into some other detail. Like that. The point is that with the Lord, he's so attractive that any particular point is enough to completely absorb you. So it's not that you need unlimited information to get, a moment of absorption. But, our pursuance of trying to know about the Lord, then that's always going to be good. So if that produces, that's great. It means that we remember the Lord. But it's not that if that's not there, then, how can we have it? So many things we deal with, we don't know how they work. Mm. It's just like, does anybody know how their phone works? Or the internet works, or how the 4G works, or these things? Some people may, but does that guy know how cooking works? But he's eating. Is he sitting there going, this and that, this chemical composition, and then the caramelization like this, and then the heat man. Is that how it's going? No, it just goes on.
Apparently, everybody knows how their vaccination works.
yes, and all the effects and what's going to happen to the universe and all that from that. That's true. Like that. Along with that, you can put that on the list of how the government should run everything and how the sports persons, what they should have done. Like that, so it goes on the list there.
Yes. This supersedes all. Hmm? What Marshall is told supersedes everything.
For now.
Oh, see. Oh, for now. Yeah. No, it's amazing. It's just about how everybody and this and that, with all the different theories. It's fun. Annoying, but yeah. Yes. I guess the point of the limited knowledge only applies to anything else other than vaccinations, right?
It's funny, like sometimes when people get too much crazy, I say, I have a master's degree in immunotechnology. I say, who cares? Like, I know better.
And so they just, so I said, no, I know. How do you know? I can feel it. Good. Can you feel this? Yeah, so it's just a matter of the pastime for the particular situation and all that. And so then that way he interacts, because that's his free will, then he does. Because some of the pastime, does it matter? The point is it's about the interaction between the Lord and the devotee. So if his appearance doesn't have an importance, you know, at least in that particular manifestation of the relationship with the devotee, what does it matter? That's the whole point. It's a matter of what's important is the relationship. So when we hear about, whatever devotee heard from the Hamsavatar, but then he comes and meets the Hamsavatar, the Hamsavatar comes and meets him. You don't have to have an appearance or disappearance pastime for that. You know, since that particular avatar itself is eternal, it's just a matter of how one appears or not.
In the past time, I think one of the places described, when Krishna appears, then he appears like ordinary kind of living entity, how he takes birth, apparently. It describes, whole description is like that, then the acharya explains why, because unless he appears like that, the devotees cannot be fully absorbed in human pastimes, thinking that is.
Very good point.
And then many people will have a doubt. The other doubt is much less, that to perceive if Lord appears by himself, just like Narsingh Devata appeared from directly pillar. Okay, how could he appear? But he's God, so he can do that. That kind of doubt will not haunt as much as a person who is appearing just like an ordinary child from a womb. How can he be the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Then the whole description of how the devotees from whom he is appearing are also not ordinary. They are part of his Swarup. And that has to be established, and to pursue that is even more difficult. That they are just like, you say they are living entities, but they are not like us. They're like earlier, one person, okay, he's better than me, kind of people, okay, but now we say that they are 3/4 of the living entities better than us, then false ego of ordinary person, even cannot ask.
Yeah, because the thing, he's always there anyway, so it's just a matter of, you know, because you don't hear, let's say, like, Matsya, is anybody asking where he came from? You know, he's just there when the Satyavrata, was this not Satyavrata?
Satyavrata.
Yeah, then he's there. But because, no one's asking that, so that, you know what I'm saying? So it's just, these things are... In the case of, okay, the pastime is nice, you want to know more about it, but like Guru has said here, is the acharyas are saying that it's human pastimes, that, you know, if you're a swan, it doesn't have to be in that context. You don't see the appearance, the disappearance, because for most of them you don't see the disappearance. So where is the disappearance in the Sringadev? He just leaves the place. You know, but even Krishna, when he leaves here, that we don't see, but still you see him going past, you know, through the universe, and the devotee, you know, the demigods and everybody are seeing him. So, that's a very nice explanation.
Yeah.
So the other ones, I can tell that. So it's not really important, because as God, he's appearing as a this or he's appearing that. So, like you said, he just appears, or sometimes a medium. So there, even the pillar, it's a medium. He appeared from the pillar because of the statement of his devotee. And that form, then, because of the statements of Brahma, you know, the benediction of Brahma. But at the same time, these forms are always there. It's just the right situation, and that he arranges the situation. So, Madhva says in his commentary, quoting Shruti, "I am unlimited, immeasurable by 100, by 1,000 times in the forms of Vasudev, Sankarsana, Prajumna, Aniruddha, Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Narasimha, Vamana, Rama, Parasurama, Balarama, Krishna, Buddha, and Kalki. These forms are not born and do not die. They do not become bound by ignorance or become liberated. They are all perfect, ageless, deathless, full of supreme bliss, Chaturveda, Shika." So then, you know, here's the thing, they're not born, they don't die. So if he, human pastimes, then there's an appearance, disappearance, so he shows, but otherwise. Nrsimha Purana says, "Yuge yuge Vishnur anadi murtim astaya vishram paripati dushtaha." Yuga after yuga, Vishnu, situated in eternal forms, protects the universe and destroys the wicked. In the Sringatapani Upanishad, it is explained by the commentator. The commentator is attributed to Shankaracharya. Etan Nrsimha Vigraham Nityam. The form of Nrsimha is eternal. Shruti says, Seyam Ritam Satyam Param Brahma Purusham Nrikeshari Vigraham. That form is real, eternal, the Supreme Brahman, the Lord, in the form of a lion and man. As well, the abodes of the various forms are described in Brahmanda Purana. This is in agreement with Jaleshu Mam Rakshatu Matsya Murtihi. May the form of Matsya protect me in the water, his eternal abode. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.8.13. Therefore, the cause of destroying beginningless sin, which is otherwise impossible to destroy, is Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna. With this in mind, his worship is emphasized in order to enlighten the ignorant in the following. He is the protector of prosperity, sacrifice, the citizens, the intelligence, the planets, and the earth. He is the protector and goal to be attained for the Andakas, Rishnis, and Yadus. May the Lord, Master of the devotees, be pleased with me. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.20. The speaker is Sukadeva. Sarva Sambhadini. One should consider how scriptures would become useless by promoting a form which is not eternal. Purva Paksha. This is like enticing a child or sick person with sweets. By knowledge of impersonal Brahman, alone one achieves the goal of human life. This is achieved by remembrance of Brahman, since there is no other meaning of scriptures. But since in the beginning one has no attraction for Brahman, scriptures promote a Lord with qualities for the practitioners, like a mother's words to a child, in order to concentrate the mind on some other favorable object. Later the child can act for its own, his own benefit. Similarly, a person seeing other scriptures, which are stronger later, can concentrate on Brahman without qualities, or Nirguna Brahman superimposed with qualities which manifest eternally. But yeah, just the superimposed qualities which manifest eternally, but then only Brahman, which is Nirguna, is eternal. And so then, but at the same time, this is constantly going on. Because if, okay, say Maya has covered this, a portion of Brahman, that's become us. So then, but is this the only time it happens? So if I give up that ignorance of identifying separate from Brahman and become Brahman again, does that mean now no other living entities will be conditioned or Maya will just go away? Because otherwise, if this is always going on, then that means it's also eternal. So Brahman's eternal. The Maya's eternal. Maya covering Brahman and getting jivas is eternal. It's just you know, at some point in that eternality, you know, the individual may decide to adjust from that position.
Maharaj, you missed the flow.
What?
First is Brahman, with avidya creates the jiva. Jiva is first. And then jiva, his superimposition, means his misidentification is maya. His bewilderment is creates maya. And that maya then superimposed on Brahman will give Ishwar. So Ishwara is the product of jiva, not the other way around.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very important.
It's very important, that's right. So that means there's a difference between maya and avidya.
Yes. Avidya is the original.
So is that eternal?
They don't see.
Yes, that's the whole point. So it just means that, so when did it start, when did it end? Why is this going on?
So then that's how all the other philosophies get fall onto this avidya.
Because it's always there.
Satan.
And this is very, very interesting perspective from the point of time, whether it's eternal. Because we discussed, you know, so many things, but whether it's eternal, whether it's temporary, or you know, goes in the cycles.
Mm-hmm.
It also doesn't match their philosophy actually.
No, if a lot, you can see is that, that's why I said that Shankaracharya made this up to bewilder the atheists, because people want to think I'm the controller and enjoyer. So if you give them a philosophy that establishes as the supreme, and that they will engage in Brahmananda, which is the highest happiness, why they won't take it? You know, it's like a hungry man, if you bring some food, he'll eat it. So that's all that people want to know. They know that if I do this, I'll be happy. They don't care about other things.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't ask. We may ask, but they don't ask. You know. Then also that maya imposed on Brahman again makes Ishwar, but that's the jnana aspect. So that means maya is knowledge and maya is illusion.
Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, they have to prove they are better than Ishwar, otherwise...
So only they can get liberated, Ishwar can't, or something?
Ishwar actually, in true sense, doesn't even exist to them. Just Brahman is... The Nirguna Brahman superimposed with qualities, means with maya.
Mm.
So he is there just for my, like, you know, benefit, just like... The Buddhism, no? It's a covered Buddhism. So mm-hmm. Buddhist says, when I see, then the sound exists. When I don't see, like...
Doesn't exist. So then, who's made that arrangement for Ishwara to be there for you to get that benefit?
Because I'm the jiva, I'm the eternal. So
no, but still, who has arranged it? Why is it arranged? I mean, of course, you can just fall back on the... Vaisheshika and that kind of thing. It's just chance or something, you know. But it doesn't make much sense. But many are very happy with this.
Can think you are still the supreme.
With all
the forms.
You know, most people think they're the supreme by karma, and if that doesn't work, you meet the supreme by jnana.
Just like now everybody thinks they are the top guy because they can vote. People are the power. What the word is?
Power to the people. No? First you need a black glove to say that. We're in the fourth grade. I think it was it? Yeah. And then there was that Olympics with those first black guys when they played the national anthem. You know, they were on the podium. You know, either gold and silver or something like that. And then when they played the national anthem, because whoever is there, they played the national anthem for those people.
Yeah.
So then they did the thing, you know, like that. You know. I think they got, they lost their, you know, they got kicked out and stuff like that. But I remember, you know, it was just so impressive in fourth grade, because it used to be you said a Pledge of Allegiance every day, you know, in first period in the class, then everyone stood up, you know, faced whatever it was, I guess it was, maybe there's, I'm not sure, but whatever it is, and then you said the Pledge of Allegiance. They don't do it anymore, but they used to. And so I remember, you know, one time doing the thing like this in fourth grade. Yeah, actually. I don't think, you know, one or two times, and that's kind of like, you know, been there, done that. You know. Yeah. Maybe it didn't work because I didn't have the black glove. Yeah, so it's just, no one asks because, you know, they don't want the thing to fall apart. You know? So you only ask on those things that can make you, how I'm God, how I'll be happy. And no one's asking whether this is I can be God, or if I actually can be happy by this process.
Nobody questions democracy.
Yeah, yeah. It's like that. It's just automatic. You just say, well, it's democracy, everybody stands back, or it's good for the economy, or they stand back, or, you know, they feel like it, you know, so everyone's saying, you know, so you have all these things that you're just supposed to axiomatic, you know, truths. But I think the technical term is called dogma.
Okay.
Dogma means it will not be explained. It means it's not up for discussion. You know, it's just like for us, there's no dogma. It's that we can discuss these things. We have, you know, much of the time it's taken dogma means it's an absolute that you've made, you've created. And so you stick to that, that's dogma. But no, dogma means unwillingness to discuss it. That's actually what dogma is. So it's just, it's not to be discussed, it's just to be accepted. Or we say it should be accepted, because it's the absolute truth, but we discuss it so that you're comfortable to accept it. But once accepting it, then you should move forward. Yeah. Uttara. That is not correct, since the Lord's unlimited qualities, form, and powers are eternal. It is not impossible for that the Lord exists with his form. Yad bhuta bhavach cha bhavishyach. The Lord existed in the past. He exists at present. He will exist in the future. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 3.8.3. Because they're saying about that, the qualities and his position and all these different things. And then they're mentioning that he exists in the past, the present, and the future. So that means at all times. But they'll try to interpret it as, you know, that means as Brahman and then as this now, but then that's not eternal. You know, and then they're also saying Brahman doesn't transform. So how does Brahman become Jiva? It's against their philosophy. Brahman can't. Saying it's covered, it's not actually. But why then, if it's not, then why are you? That's like the guy coming out with the bed sheet saying he's a ghost. You know, and then there's a whole process and this and that. And like, no, he just, you know, it's just not real. Who cares? This is also true for the avatars, since the avatars simply manifest in the material world without being created. Because before I was saying Shankaracharya is making this point, the Sringa Dev is, the form of the Sringa is eternal. You know? When Vishnu appears on earth, there is no contradiction, since he only enters the material world. Moreover, in Uttara Mimamsa, it is concluded that the Murtis described for worship in the scriptures are also the eternal Lord. Tam pitagam ye tu yajanti dhiras te sham shukam shasvatam netare sham. Those who worship the deity in the pita have eternal happiness, whereas others do not. Gopal Tapani Upanishad 1.20. Thus, it is very audacious to think otherwise. Here it is stated, by worshipping such forms, one attains eternal happiness. Right? So, eternal happiness can only be on the transcendental platform. Right? So, yeah. Yeah, so how would worship of Maya give you eternality? It has to be worship of Brahman gives you eternality. You know, they're saying Brahman is covered, you know, and therefore you have Ishwara, and then you're worshipping, but still, the point that makes Ishwara Ishwara by the Mayavad philosophy is the illusion. So how would an illusion give you Brahman? You know, so that would be the thing, is that by covering Brahman with illusion, then we'll worship that same feature of illusion and we'll become free. You know? So then that becomes a difficulty. So, you know, the acharyas in other places also mention you can't wash your hands of blood with blood. So how you'll get rid of ignorance by worshipping ignorance. Here it is stated, by worshipping such forms one attains eternal happiness. Without worship of the Murti, one simply attains rash ignorance. Shruti says, jnanat mokshaha, from knowledge comes liberation. Since the words dhira, wise, is used, one must reject the argument that worship of forms is for the children and invalids. Yeah, so it says, others do not attain this happiness, netare sham. This emphasizes that one must come in a proper line of authority for worship. One should not think that the Lord's form is some superimposition like the mind, as in this following statement. Mana brahmet upasita. One should worship the mind as Brahman. Chandogya Upanishad. Thus, in the statements concerning worship, it is proved that the form of the Lord is eternal. Swadhyaya dishta deva devata samprayogaha. By study comes realization of the Lord in the form most admired, Patanjali. This supports remembering the Lord with form. Udrita Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Although Krishna is eternally the Lord of Goloka, by his inconceivable power he descends to the mature world by his own will, along with his residence, Braja, yet he carries out his activities in a pure, variegated way. Jivas can understand these transcendental activities of the Lord by the pure vision of their soul and not by mature eyes. Footnote 4. O Vyasadeva, your vision is completely perfect. Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in vow and situated in truthfulness, and thus you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.3. Right, so when we're understanding Krishna consciousness, hearing Krishna consciousness, contemplating it, understanding it, we're not using the material mind and material intelligence, material senses. We're using the spiritual aspect. Because the soul has mind, intelligence, and that. It's just covered by this other. And so if you don't acknowledge the original, you work with the material. That's why at any time, any living entity can appreciate Krishna consciousness, whatever their position, because the soul by nature is from that position. Now, how they consistently are able to function on that platform, work in that way, that will take practice. But explaining it in that association, then they can appreciate it by association. Then they keep that association as instructions, that continues with them, and then by that practice, bhajana kriya, then the impurities that are there that we identify with the external then goes away. Then one becomes steady. Right? And once you've removed that majority of the covering, then one starts to get taste. And by that taste, one loses interest in anything that's left. So then that turns to attachment like this. Though Krishna may become visible to the material eye by his power, usually he remains invisible. As the pastimes of Krishna are eternal, not polluted by material time and place, They're visible only to the devotional eye of the pure spirit soul and held in the mind saturated with love. Footnote 5. Thus he fixed his mind, perfectly engaged it by linking it in devotional service without any tinge of materialism, and thus he saw the absolute personality of Godhead along with his external energy, which was under full control. Srimad Bhagavatam 174. As long as people try to approach Krishna with pride and material knowledge, Krishna will remain far from their reach. But when people call out to Krishna with a humble heart, they will see Krishna and experience the Lord's unlimited bliss. Right, so this idea where we cultivate, that's why we make so many comments about mundane scholarship. We don't have a problem with knowledge about Krishna. I mean, that's what we do. We study about Krishna, we discuss about Krishna, try to understand more about Krishna, try to get others to understand more about Krishna. Like this, that's not the knowledge is not the problem. Pride of knowledge is the problem. So that's the thing, is that this living entity on the transcendental platform is full of knowledge. They're you know, Satchitananda, they're knowledge. But they're not proud of that. They identify as servant of Krishna. So that's why it's not useful in devotional service for our own development, or you know, for inspiring others, if we use these external identities, you know, of being a scholar or being, you know, an academic or being all these things. Anytime that there's that pride, it's always going to create problem because it's material. You can say we're engaging Krishna's service, but you don't have to have the identity to engage it. Right? You know, to use a pot and a spoon, I don't have to identify with them. I have to know what they are and use them intelligently. So this whole thing that we have to become professionals, or we have to become knowledgeable, or we have to become, you know, more, you know, that thing that we're the charitable people or things like that. No, we're the Hare Krishna people. So that's the thing, is that pride can't be there. Whenever it's there, it doesn't work. If it doesn't work for the gopis, you know, who are on the highest platform and are actually the most qualified in the universe, then why will it work for us? So that's a very important point. It says, as long as people try to approach Krishna with pride and material knowledge, oh, I can work this out, I'm intelligent, I'm a PhD, therefore, you know, it all happens because, you know. But it's kind of like, no. Otherwise, wouldn't all the PhDs, as they advance, wouldn't it be, you know, the kids when they go to school like that, they'd be completely gross materialists and atheists. But as they advance and go through knowledge, then, you know, there's a little glimmer of something in high school, then undergraduate, there's a little bit more, then when they start doing the postgraduate degrees, then, you know, there's a little bit more, and then when they do PhD, then they're like self-realized. Wouldn't that be then how it would work? But we see it goes the opposite way. Kids are personal, then they start the process, and by the time they come to PhD, they're complete atheists. So therefore, it's what's the pride of material knowledge, and that's the thing, they're proud of their knowledge because they know everything. So it's like to the foolish general public, because they're a PhD, they can speak on anything. But within the academy, you can only speak within your discipline, within the range of your thesis. Like, you know, you did your thesis on the tsetse fly in the northern part of Congo. You cannot speak on the tsetse fly in the southern part. You know, and you can't speak about the tsetse fly in Zimbabwe. You know, forget it. But for common people, then they show their pride and yes, and I know this and that and everything like that. And so that's the thing, is this pride of knowledge, pride of material knowledge, like we were saying, you know. Everyone knows everything about the vaccines, or, you know, and even though they're telling you technical points and all that are wrong, and then you're saying, hey, that's my field, you know, I know, well, who cares for that, I know, you know, so it's pride of material knowledge. So it's useless for devotional service. It says, as long as people try to approach Krishna with pride of material knowledge, Krishna will remain far from their reach. But when such people call out to Krishna with a humble heart, they will see Krishna experience the Lord's unlimited bliss. Right, so humble heart and real knowledge, the symptom of it is humility. You can't be humble if you don't have knowledge. But when they have the pride of material knowledge instead of the humility of actual knowledge, they can't understand. Right? So they will see Krishna and experience the bliss. So they're calling out to him, Krishna, with a humble heart. So they're taking the knowledge and applying it. Then they will see Krishna. You know, the relationship is there, the sambandha, and they will experience the Lord's unlimited bliss, prayojana. So it's all very simply said there. But the action and the identity has to be just a servant of Krishna. There can't be that pride of that knowledge. So that makes sense. So this kind of direction where we're becoming, you know, professionals in academia and administration, well, not that, management and stuff like that. You know, because who talks administration, right? So it's management. Then these things, it's like, what's the use in devotional service? Right? It's not actually managerially going fabulous. And it doesn't work well for devotional service. So what's the point? You know, the Prabhupada's point is that, you know, it's like even in the material society, they're using all these things, but they're not even getting the material things they want to get. So how useless? You know? The Prabhupada is very practical like that. You say, okay, you're committed to being a gross materialist, but are you getting what you're saying you're going to get? If you're not, you know, I think if you're you know, really wealthy and really this and that, things are going fat, okay, at least he's getting what he's saying, but, you know, who's getting? Where's the prosperity? You know? So then, how can you, you know, Hiranyakashipu, now that is a materialist. Ravana, that is a materialist. You know, Duryodhana, now there, you know, good example, you know, a materialist. They got something. You know? But then all the guys talking all their philosophy and all that, what do they got? You know?
This is like, give an example that if you want a big car in India, like big means the starting range is 12, 13 lakhs like that.
Right.
First of all, like, he need to spend at least 5-6 years of his salary, an average person,
right,
paying off and all. And by the time he says that it is his, it's already fallen apart to half extent.
Yeah, because he has to pay over those years by the time.
And yeah. Then... See, just to get a small thing like that, you worked so hard and it's nothing. And the people in heavenly planets have, you know, the Viman, which is completely made of gold and it can go without diesel, without petrol.
Yeah. See how ecological it is. It's like, you know, like that.
So then how much more hard work you have to do?
Mm-hmm. To get.
And to get the same facility eternally, then how much more hard work you have to do? So why do you complain that there are hardships and devotional?
Yeah, that's true. That's a very nice one. That's a very nice one. Yeah, like it mentions in the Bhagavatam, it's talking about them flying around in the swan airplanes, like that, in Vaikuntha.
They have, yeah. But they have eternally.
Yeah. It's just theirs. It means they come from their homes every day to come to Krishna's palace. You know. And that, and do the service.
In Swarga, they're tenants. They may have some facility where they're like tenants.
Yeah. It's just a matter of time before you disappear.
They'll rip away your clothes also and sell you.
Hmm?
When your punya is finished, they'll rip away your clothes also and push you down.
Yeah, like that. Yes, with the appearance of genuine faith, they lose their material pride and offensive nature. So, therefore, then, from that you can say, if there's pride in material knowledge, means there's some aspect of faith that's weak, right? Because on the platform, nishta means it's stable, means it can't have pride. Right? It can't be an identity. Not that by habit, by practice, it doesn't come up now and again, because we're saying, you know, nishta is 75% of anartha nivritti. So 25 is there, okay, you know, they it comes up. But it's not the identity like that. And so So that would mean that there has to be some form of a faith in knowledge or karma or some political stance or something is still there that you think is important. And because of that, then the full, that genuine faith that one will lose all material pride and offensive nature hasn't manifested. So that's why we give up that's why the first point Lord Chaitanya makes is the soul is servant of Krishna. That's the first one he makes. If that's the identity, then all these other things will all naturally come and fall into place.
Also, Maharaj, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, that initial stress that the faith is in the goal, but in the process there is no faith. So we lean back to karma and jnana to progress till the stage of nistha.
Mm-hmm.
But once that stage is attained, then nistha means that faith in the devotional process is the only method, and it is independent mm-hmm. method.
Yes, it's independent. Otherwise, sometimes it's thought by some of the other. They was telling me that they're working with the Food for Life, and in their area, the guy in charge was making some comment about the importance of Food for Life that had zero to do with devotional service. But he was very convinced that, this is what's going to make everything work and all that. He says, no, this is secondary. So, as the thing is that if it's philosophy without religion, then just on the philosophical it goes, but then there'll be some weakness in the practice. And if you're taking just religion without philosophy, then what you're doing you may practice very nicely, but it won't have the proper direction. So you have to use both of them together. You have to use both. So that's why. And if we're saying charity, but based on who? Who said charity? Who's the authority for the authority that a charity is the important element? Because we're working on this modern thing. Who says that charity is important? Right? Are we working on Krishna? So you're distributing the food. Okay, that's going to make Krishna conscious. How about your personal? How much of your personal wealth are you giving in charity? So it's only because I manage the institutional aspect of it, I'm going to get all the benefit? Isn't it by you should be charitable yourself? That's the whole thing. That are they charitable? No, they only do the institution and they identify with that material piety. So one has to be very, very careful. Maya is very clever. She makes it look so important when it's not necessarily important.
Also, it's a common thing that every time this communist or somebody comes up with any person becomes more rich, then they always compare. If he gives like 2% of his
wealth
in charity, then the whole world's hunger goes away. And recently they did it with the Tesla guy. And he actually sold off, whether he sold or not, but officially he released that he sold whatever they mentioned, that much percentage of his stocks.
Right.
And then saying that he is ready for charity, first give me your whole program. How would you eradicate the world hunger?
How would you apply it?
And then yet to get back on that.
It's just like you have that, the thing of all these poor people and everything like that, and not getting the facility, not getting the opportunity. We we're collecting money for that, so they collected $90 million. For helping, this downtrodden group that's never gotten an opportunity. And then, once they had 90 million, then the person who was leading the whole thing spent 15 million as if it's their own money on buying properties for themselves. And then when people complained, they just said, okay, yeah, maybe I'm not the person to do everything. And then number two took over and then they, settled down in there. So where is the okay? Now you have that property. You're worth 15 million. Why were you giving? Now you're a rich guy. Where are you giving the charity? That's the whole thing. So it's not applied. It's always that the institution is doing it, They don't have to do it, but the institution is in charge of you. You have to do it. So in other words, by getting you to give in charity to, means everybody in the community is giving charity to the people in the community. And that way then, it's all distributed equally. But to organize that, we need an institution in which I am, a controlling factor. And naturally, I get facility for doing that, all-encompassing, all-perfect work for everyone's benefit. But what my facility that I have is not equal to what everybody else is getting. It's way, way above, hundreds of thousands of times greater. So that's the thing, that hiding behind this institution, institutionalizing morality or, religion and philosophy so that seemingly you get benefit, but it's just because of, you're just a humble servant of the of that, but you're not a humble servant when it comes to your social status and position.
Hence the missionaries in India, very enthusiastic.
Yeah.
All of them have big buildings.
Yeah, it's a big, good facility. So that's the whole, that's why it mentions, don't do these things for money. It's one of the, first 10 points to take up devotional service. Isn't it first 10 or is it second 10? I think it's second 10. With those 20, then you can qualify. You can nicely practice devotional service. So we always have to be careful because Krishna is very, very clever. I mean, Maya is very, very clever here. There's no room for caste, birthright, material knowledge, beauty, power, influence of material science, position, wealth, or kingdom in cultivating Krishna consciousness. For this reason, understanding of Krishna remains far away from those who are proud of the material status. It is easy to understand, then, why Krishna is disregarded in the modern world. Right? Because then he's disregarded because no one wants to give up these things. Footnote 6. The intelligence of cruel-minded persons is blinded by false pride based on great wealth, opulence, prestigious family connections, education, renunciation, personal beauty, physical health, and successful performance of Vedic rituals. Being intoxicated with this false pride, such cruel persons blaspheme the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.9. Yeah. The unfortunate position of science is that it tries to know truths that are beyond its scope, right? Because it has its, just as every discipline has its field, they're trying to deal beyond that. It means their field is what is this rock? Their field is not where does the rock come from? Because that they can't observe. So it's not for them to deal with. Just like the guy who's dealing with rocks can't give a lecture on psychology, right? The guy who works in that field can. Now, why you are interested in rocks and working so hard and applying yourself and being committed, that the psychologist can explain, not the archaeologist. So that's the thing, is that it tries to know truths that are beyond its scope. One, it's out of their field by their own definition. And two, you're dealing with the senses. How do you know things before the senses and beyond the senses? Though it has no qualification for spiritual matters, science tries recklessly to understand and ends up with worthless conclusions and a depraved mentality. Krishna gives his mercy when a jiva shows humility born of association with devotees. This is the jiva's qualification for spiritual matters. It is impossible to gain spiritual knowledge by material intellect. Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Chapter 1, Part 3, Footnote 7. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. Srimad Bhagavatam 10, 14, 29. Concerning this, so therefore by material intellect, the material intellect means it will start with the senses. Because the intellect technically is only analyzing what the information the senses bring in. That's how material knowledge works, material intellect. Means the senses perceive something, or perceive, you know, a range of things. The mind, by previous samskaras, focuses on something in specific. And then from that, then that's analyzed by the intellect. Right? Only at that time is it analyzed. So it's dependent on material knowledge. So it can only work from that projection going up. So that's the... So the other direction then cannot be understood. Right? It's interesting, because when you come first, you know, you've been moving and that, so you feel warm, you sit down, and, oh yeah, that, as you sit and cool off. But,
yeah.
Like when I sat down, these were hot, but now they're not. Yeah, so this aspect, that's the inductive method. Inductive method means material knowledge. That's just what it means. Even you've heard from authority, still you're putting into the context of your samskaras and what's important for you and getting a result that you want. But shabda means you're hearing from authority, but it's a matter of hearing in such a way that what is the actual overall benefit? I will get benefit, but I, being part and parcel of the Supreme, I have to see my position of vyasti in the context of the overall samasti. Only then, when samasti is in, I'm in line with that, then there'll be the proper balance. So it's very subtle, the difference between the two. Because we'll say, oh, but I heard from authority and not, but where did he hear from? But in us, authorities always go back, it always goes back to Krishna. Right? Brahma heard from Krishna, Shiva heard from Krishna, Lakshmi heard from Krishna, the four Kumaras heard from Krishna. You know, from the avatar that we don't know how they appeared. So that's objective. Then it works very, very nicely. It has to be appreciated that if you're taking it from my position and that's the perspective, no, it's when I see my position, the context of the supreme position, the universal position, and it's from that, that's the view, and then I bring my position in line with that view, so I can see like that, then it matches. But if it's that, no, the Supreme has to be in the context of my view, that's material knowledge, material intellect. Even if you're dealing with the Veda, it's still Shankaracharya, it's material. Those on Vijnana Maya that are not interested in the Supreme, that's material knowledge. So the devotees are situated there because of their sadhana to practice so they can develop. It means they don't know, so they practice. Prabhupada gives the example of you're driving the car and something happens and the car stops. You get out of the car and push until it starts. Right? So pushing, that's sadhana bhakti. When it starts, then that's spontaneous devotional service. So it's just a matter of once situated in there as far as the position of knowledge and engaging everything, but the focus is on Anandamaya. That's your goal. You're not pushing the car thinking, yeah, we're doing this. You know, it's about starting the car. So, no?
Yeah. And some time ago we discussed it with the students. And I was trying to explain this point, but then we realized that there's a third position. By practice, like you mentioned, because practice is given by Srila Prabhupada to all of us, is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
By practice, we on Vijnana Maya.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal is in Ananda Maya.
Mm-hmm.
But our lifestyle is in Pranamaya. So this becomes then the difficulty why we can't get together outside of a temple room or outside of, you know, kirtan hall or whatever, when we actually intensely doing or Bhagavatam class, intensely doing, you know, those angas of devotional service. As soon as we out, we fall into our condition.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's very diverse.
Yes, yes. Yeah, because the Manamoya is a platform of social.
Yeah.
So unless you accept Manamoya, you can't actually have community. It means you can't have a little bit of that, you know, it's like, basically, I would say all those situated on Pranamoy have, you know, one, two, three people that they have a closeness with. And so then they feel that sense of community, and because there's a greater, you know, as we discussed before, is that the Mayavad philosophy for material consciousness is all-encompassing. Therefore, everyone has the sense that they're all the community. But I guarantee if you bring together all those with that that position of morality, you know, that are situated on that, simply on that moral platform, then they won't, who's going to agree? Right? I mean, it's already have two major divisions that they've made of conservative and liberal, but within each of those, no one's going to agree with each other. You know? So it's, they don't have community. It's just that, means it, like we mentioned, it's that when there's a common enemy, then benefit, you might get together. But otherwise, there's no community.
Yeah, so it's gone. It's not. It's not bigger than that.
No,
that's all.
I mean, you see the natural thing, the worshippers of. You know, yeah, Ganesh, so it's, you know, that therefore the nature of this, that, so many things. But it's, yeah, it's small little groups. It's like the, if you go to the savanna, then there's so many communities within that savanna.
Yeah.
But they have no connection with each other or...
Yeah. They live their own cycle.
They live their own cycle in their own world and stay out of each other's way, you know, lest they get eaten. Become recycled. I mean, you do have to maintain the grass. So.
The connection with the point is called dogma and axiom.
Mm.
Axiom is like actually a Greek word I was just saying. It actually refers to shabda.
Mm.
It's considered self-evident truth, which doesn't require any proof.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have a lifestyle at pranamaya state, then it's all about the result. If we are getting a good result, then we don't question the process. So we practice devotional service because it gives peace of mind. Then that is the main goal. So they don't question the process till the time they are achieving what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still at the level of dogma, the whole process of bhakti.
Mm-hmm. But means the individual.
For that individual. Yeah. So that's why then all this, as soon as somebody else proposes something, then immediately it's shifted. Because for them it's just like any other thing. Like to get money they have to work. But why that work they never question. Similarly, to get peace of mind, then if there is alternative, somebody provides better alternative with lesser effort.
Yeah, better results with lesser effort.
Then they would definitely embrace that.
Yeah. Full pay, no work. Yes.
Yeah, I was always wondering whether fanatics and dogmatics come from the Krishna consciousness. And then in one class, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he explained that the fanatics are those who practice but don't study Srila Prabhupada's books. So they are like pure fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
And the dogmatics, they practice, they do study Srila Prabhupada's books.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't understand what's in those books.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think about, they don't contemplate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ask them, they give you the dogma, but they can't explain it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so it's interesting is how everybody's working on axiomatic truth, but it's just what's the source of that truth?
Yeah.
You know, so on Anamoya, it's just you have to eat. No one questions that. You know, or that there'll be family, or that they'll, you know, so eating, sleeping, mating, defending, no one questions that. You know, the animals, if you're asleep, they don't question, you know, what is he doing? Or he's eating, what is he doing? They don't question. It's just, it's normal. So that's their axiomatic truth that comes from. Just the you know, material need for a material need of the senses. And then these, the pranamoy, then these moralistic, then it's just, you say, equality. It's supposed to be somehow or another an axiomatic truth, but where does it come from? Right? You know, has it been given in the Shastra? I mean, if we're using Shastra, here it says in Shastra, but they're only using Shastra to support their you know, how you say, their pranamoy concept of equality. Because then it's for all living entities. You know, so you see all, then you're working, like you said, in gunas and groups. So it's only those who accept what I say, they're all right. Right? If I say, you know, all the problems are white, so whites are bad, that's not racism. But if you say, no, no, you can't say like that, you have to look at it from, oh, then you're a racist. You know, so it's like if you accept their philosophy, you're not a racist. If you don't, you are a racist. But what they're expounding is racism. So that's the interesting thing. You know, so from whites are superior to whites are inferior, you know, whites are superior, it's racism. Whites are inferior, it's also racism. It's just, you know, so that's the thing. So that it just becomes... pranamoy, then it's if you agree with their axiomatic truth, then, you know, then it's there. But otherwise it has no authority other than their willingness to accept it based on the benefits that they see for themselves and those who accept it. Like that. Then in monomoy, then Shastra, it has to come from Shastra, and it's based on how Shastra says and how it applies. But then you're only looking at the social benefit and the, you know, the same you know, dharma arta kama. I'm doing dharma because I'll get benefit and I'll enjoy. But they're willing to go through the you know, the anxiety, the effort according to direction of scripture rather than effort according to their own mental speculation. Yes.
In this connection, earlier to the age of enlightenment, philosophy means it had these axiomatic truths established that can never be changed.
Mm.
But since the age of enlightenment, education is considered as a subsystem of society.
Oh, instead of the main system. Okay, so society teaches, society's educational program is according to
what
the needs of society.
So what happens is with generational change, then the needs change. So with that, then the education should readjust their axiomatic truth.
Mm-hmm.
So what is considered as education in 1920s, 1930s is no more education in 60s. And what is considered in 60s as education is no more considered in 90s, and now in 2020
mm-hmm.
shifted. So every 20, 30 years, then they have to change the whole thing
mm-hmm.
again and readjust, and then all the methodology of their education, just because of this point that
mm-hmm.
for them dogmas are their axiomatic truths instead. They don't accept real axiomatic truths.
Yeah. They don't accept the higher authority.
Yeah.
It's there the authority.
And then it's an established thing for them that education is a subsystem of society that has to be accepted.
So that means, then you put it, that the Brahmins end up on the bottom. They're just, you know, what gets done, what the society says.
No, you are responsible for changing it in the right direction.
Yeah, yes. No, but I'm saying is that Brahmins, it's rather than the Brahmins based on scripture are then saying, no, that then you follow that. No, they have to adjust with you to get done what you want to get. Yeah, it's just like business taking over corporate taking over universities, so they only teach what's useful in the corporate world.
And the fun part when I was studying is, it's because, like they say, that the politics have natural influence. The politics of the state, how the state is, has an actual influence on the quality of education people get. But at the same time, they say that politicians should not have influence on the educational system. So they can stop there. Then the corporates have an influence through.
Yeah, because they have money.
They have money. So they dictate what kind of education you get. It's like,
yeah, so then Brahmins can't control it, Kshatriyas can't control it, I mean the administration guys, so that leaves it to the Vaishyas, because Shudras, they won't know what to do with it. They may do their own little thing, but it won't be greatly organized. You know, like somebody will do some small thing, and so few people will come, and they'll teach them very nicely, you know, some trade or some skill or some particular view or something.
It's no more schooling then.
Yeah.
With Shudras, then it's no more even schooling. Like schooling means there is like an organization.
Mm-hmm.
So they want schools and colleges, that schooling aspect to be there, then at least they should have the Vaishya support.
Yeah.
Yeah, just recently somebody sent me several articles of how education works in our days in order to help us to improve our school.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was reading quite lengthy articles. I read two out of I don't know how many are there. But the main point what I've learned, I mean, technical things and operational things, you know, they have some value.
Mm-hmm.
But the main idea is that nowadays the whole education is not value-oriented education, it's profit-oriented education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's all built, and they have plans, and they... Because it's a Russian article,
mm-hmm.
and they already analyzed, you know, in the 90s when the Soviet Union fell apart,
mm-hmm.
what mistakes they made, because nobody cared about education, everybody was trying to grab as much as possible there. So what consequences are we facing now after 30 years of that was neglected and the dynamic and. But it all comes into, you know, production or intellectual, how do you call it? Intellectual...
It's like science and those things.
Yeah, science and... But nothing about teaching, you know, people actual values of life.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking our school is... I mean, we can use some techniques, whatever, you know, because it goes by stages and also it's cyclic. But our values are eternal,
mm-hmm.
and their values, like Prabhu was mentioning, every 20, 30 years, they have to change the whole thing because it shifts. Like now, we're looking into digital world, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing should be digitalized, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's very different of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, because there is you're bringing everything down. So basically it comes down to is that if it's profit-oriented, then everybody's going to work for profit. Everyone has that. It means even the animals want profit. But the difficulty comes is, and if you know, there's always the push of people being satisfied with what they have, living simple and all that. But who's saying that? The people who have ridiculous amounts of wealth that know how to run the economic system. So basically, it just comes down to the economic, those and leaders of the economic system. They become leaders of society, and they. You know, engage the common people to do the work, and they engage the, you know, the intellectuals and the administration to, you know, train and organize so that they get their profit. You know, so that was the whole, in the Age of Enlightenment, that was the whole thing. Bourgeois came up, you know, so then that was the thing. So. And but at the same time, as you see, is that the, so much they're going this direction of the socialism, that'll be about the people. But the problem is unless you're making money, where does the social? Because they're talking socialism. That means you, who are talking it, have to reduce your money. They're not doing that. You know. So that's the whole. The person's talking about, you know, these big corporations should give more money. Great, nice. You know, it means you shouldn't be overly greedy, but at the same time, you should be doing the same thing. You know, they're defunding the police, and then they're hiring personal security. At $200,000 a year for one person. You know, maybe it's a family, but I'm just saying it's that person who is that particular politician, because it's unsafe now. They spend $200,000 just for themselves. Right? So you can imagine, maybe if you worked on that, okay, great. So that means your city has, you know, 10 million people. Okay, and so $200,000, you know, per person, that's how much should be there for that security. But they've passed the law that all this is reduced for that. So how is it about, you know, how are they actually socialists? How are they, you know, it's just people finding clever ways to profit them for themselves. You know? So it all circles around them. So then when you get it down there, everything circles around the society. But as we've seen, any society that's tried to use socialism as their central feature always ends up with a very strong dictatorship that benefits quite well. Like I remember seeing a picture of Castro when he went to visit, I think, was it at the time, Brezhnev?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're sitting there together. He went to, you know, like that. How did he get there? Did he take a boat? You know, I mean, that's what the locals are doing. You know, they have to get on the boat to go over to America. You know, like that. He's got two Rolex watches on one on each wrist. You know, one for the time in Russia and one for the time in Cuba. But Rolex, he's not wearing a Timex, you know, which, you know, the kids got. You know. So that's the thing, is that it's not a complete philosophy. So it's not controlled, it's not regulated. So that's the whole thing. Human life is meant to regulate. So that's what Shastra gives, so you can see what's where and everything like that, you know. So it's just like, yes, the king may have ridiculous amounts of wealth, but if his citizens aren't doing well, it's his responsibility. He can't blame it on them and that. He has to work in such a way, like I think it was, there was one example in the histories of one, you know, one king, and somehow or another there was some misfortune, maybe it was a drought, or so there was some kind of famine. So then in that, the king has his own, how you say, stock, you know, store of grains and all that. And then the government offices, you know, that do the bureaucracy has their things. Has you know, that they have. So then the king was saying, when the people came were talking about this, then the king said, okay, you know, from the government store we should give. You know, he wasn't thinking about his, you know, about this or that, because if that goes, you know, because it's all his, so then anything, it goes that way. And he's saying, they give there, and then they say, how do you run the government? You know, says, I'll put mine into there. And the prime minister says, no, do it the other way. You give to the public, and then the government will take care of the government work, you know, paying and running the, you know, that means the, what do you call it, you know, the public facilities. Because the people, you know, they have a relation with you, not with the government. You know, so he's responsible in that way. So then it balances. If something's going wrong, he's responsible. Well, now it's just, you know, they're only there for 4 or 5 years, and what do they care? You know? So, that, you know, they only care if they're going to get elected again. If they got another term, then they go for it. But if not, then who cares? So it doesn't have the balance. It doesn't have the thing. So the Vedic always have, you have authority, you have obligation. Well, now it's always about what's my right, rather than what's my obligation. So all these things come out is that these are beyond the material intellect. Material intellect cannot conceive of this, cannot deal with this. Right? Because they come up with, you know, you see one thing, oh, it would be nice if everyone's equal, but how are you going to make everyone equal? So they have to have, so to make everyone equal, we have to have a huge government that will control everybody to make sure they're all equal. Who's going to pay for that government? Those people that they're making equal. You know, it's kind of like you're benefiting them so because of that, and because, and naturally because we're doing this work for you, you take care of us. You know, so it can't be just it's all equal. I mean, I think the Europeans, when they went to the Americas, you know, I mean, anywhere in the world, but one place in America, I think it may have been in Brazil, there was one tribe. It wasn't a big tribe. There was like something like 150, you know, people in the tribe or something. Maybe it was 150 adults. But it wasn't so much. It was small. They were the only place. What was unique about them is they had no leader. They discussed everything, and that's just guided amongst themselves, who does what and things like that. There was no administrative hierarchy. One tribe out of all the ones that are there. And, you know, of what have they seen anywhere else in the world? You know, how did that work out for those guys? You know, so one guy out of all these people, you know. That makes sense? You know, so they're talking about it, you know. It's like, who cares for the Essenes? You know, so it's just like, well, yeah, so it's not going to work. They're always going to have the authority, and that means you have to have a huge thing because everybody's got to be watching everybody and just seeing that it's all equal. That means you have to have a huge administration to take care of that. And where does the money come from? Administration, they get their money from taxes and, you know, taxes and what is it called? Oh, yeah, there's a group of names, you know, fees, penalties, you know, stuff like that. Because it's like if I'm making money, that's taxed. If I'm, let's say, moving goods from this place and going to sell it in that place, there's a fee that you have to pay. So it's like a tax, but it's got a different name. So that's how the government makes its money. So that means it has to come from those very people that are supposed to be living. Because they don't talk about, okay, you're going to get this much, you're going to have to be taxed this much. They never mention that. They just say you're going to get this much. So they don't actually discuss the real thing, how they work. So it can't work. You know, and if you have only the Vaishyas, the point is without these others, they can't function. They can't train people. They can't administrate. They know how to make money. And they can't do the work. You know, on a big scale. I mean, it's on a small scale, yeah, they can. Same like administration, without money, without how will they work? Brahmins, how will it work? You can have just Brahmins if no one's making any profit. So then in Satyayuga, you just have the Brahmins. And it can work. But then, you know, life's very simple and all that. But if you want to do something more elaborate, then you have to have the whole system. So that's the point. Material intellect means you're overemphasizing one of these four. And because of that, it creates an imbalance and it won't work. So only Krishna consciousness can get a proper balance, because then you're seeing everything in the goal of pleasing Krishna, and everything's connected to Krishna. So since I'm pleasing Krishna, what thing at this point would be used for Krishna? You know, just like, let's say, you have a big mansion, and it's for the head of who the mansion belongs to. So it's time for lunch. Which part of the mansion do you use? Right? The kitchen, the dining room. You know, you might use the car or some whatever it is, to, you know, go to the market, you know, there'll be something for the treasury. So that's favorable for that. But it's not like sitting in the living room, you know, smoking a hookah. Now it's useful. You know, when that's there and it's, let's say, family time and all that, then it's going to be centered around, you know, the living area and the family and all that. It's not going to be in the kitchen. It's not going to be in the car like this. So that's all it is Daivavarnashram means whatever part is useful right now, that's the part that's used. You don't unnecessarily emphasize an area that's not useful because you have an attachment for it. You know, so if in your service you're engaging this in Krishna's service, you use that, you keep that. But if it's not, it's given up. You know, like so for us, obvious things like, you know, worship of the forefathers, worship of the demigods, these big Shrauta, you know, Karmakanda, Yagyas, these things, these go. Because, you know, what do we need them for? And then, you know, as long as it's useful, it's used. So that's why it becomes very hard to understand, because we don't, you know, you were saying the mechanics of it. Like somebody probably saw from those articles on education some techniques and they thought, oh yeah, here's some great stuff. What they didn't notice was the gross materialism that the whole thing's based on and why you even use the materials. What drives those materials being used is profit.
Yeah.
They don't see that, because the others that we say, oh yeah, well here's all the techniques, so use it. But the point is what's going to drive you using it? Unless it's that dedication to Krishna consciousness and training the children. Because in the schools nowadays, it's like the guy's, you know, head of the school because he makes profit. He could, you know, kids are just another medium, you know. You know, how many saris can you sell? Right? One lady goes into the shop, how much will she buy? You know, even if she's very wealthy, she buys 10, 12 like this and say, a couple of lakhs. Right? And then when will she come back? Not soon. Like that. But the kids, it's like they got to pay so much per month to get into the school, they had to pay lakhs. You know, all these things like that. You have 2,000 kids in your school. That's 2,000 times 2 lakhs. Right? That's 4,000 lakhs. That's a lot. And that's just, they're in the school. That's not even now educating them.
Daycare.
Yeah. And the figures I'm giving are from the 80s. Because I know one devotee, you know, they're all business family. And one of the brothers, because he didn't want to work in the family business, he went to Delhi, opened a school. Like that. And that's what he was getting at that time. That was a lot of money then. You know, and then you get the best teachers and that, you make it sound good. Yeah, everybody's a postgraduate teacher. You know, the main ones will all be PhDs and the other ones will be, you know, masters and all that. And you pay them good money. But I mean, if one kid joins a school, he gives 2 lakhs. It's like, you know, how much, you know, those times, how much do you have to pay those guys? 5,000 a month. You know, and he's teaching how many kids? You know, so, you know, you're doing good. And that's just off of school. Now you get the monthly fee because, hey, as PhDs teaching your kid, you can't just give, you know, 10 rupees. So all the rich people will be sending their kids and all that, and they'll be giving thousands every month. You know, so it's like he's making profit on profit. You know?
And then bus fee.
Yeah, everything fee, you know, use the toilet fee, you know. Yes, you know, that'll be, you know, this month, you know, 573 times of using the urinal and this many times from using the toilet, so that'd be a total lie. Yeah, no, it's amazing. You say, and that's the fee. The fee is this much. That's just to be in the school. The one was to get in the school, the other is to be in the school, and then it's like you have the book fee, the this fee, the after school fee, the sports, you know, the extracurricular, the extracurricular, that you pay for that, you know.
In Israel, the education, they're normal, they're getting this free. And then you get all that stuff, and it comes to quite an amount.
Yeah.
Even though the education is free,
yeah.
But everything else has a fee.
It's so clever. So that's the thing he's talking about, the corporate kind of mentality is there. Yeah.
And then it's not optional.
It's not optional.
All the extracurricular activities are not optional.
You have to do, otherwise
you have to do. And then the children, like from 8 to 12 year old, they cannot manage those extracurricular. They go crazy, actually. And then neither they focus on the academics, nor like extracurricular, unless you relate to it, it doesn't make any sense. Some of the sports doesn't make any sense to me. So,
Like, what do you call it? Lacoste or something, like lacrosse? Or you had a stick. You have a stick with a net on the end. And then you have this ball that on the stick, you're throwing it around. You know, you could throw it with your hand, but no, you have to throw it with a stick with a net, you know.
We all know that one.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I think it's a French thing. Om
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Yeah, no, it's so clever. And all this is being controlled by the modes.